Think about what 8 years of civil war in Syria have meant for people and home. More than 5 million Syrians have fled the country, millions more displaced inside Syria. This week marks this troubling eighth year of war there. Today, the United Nations raised money for Syria at a conference in Brussels. International donors pledge nearly $7 billion. But that's short of what the UN says is needed. 4 years ago, Ali Amalek met a group of Syrian refugees on a raft in the Mediterranean. They were all strangers then, but she walked with them from Greece to Germany. Ali Amalek is a writer and Syrian-American herself. She's just back from a trip to Europe where she checked in on those families.
Well, in the first instance, I have seen incredible resilience. I actually don't know how well any of us would have survived the sorts of things that they have been asked to survive repeatedly. I've also seen a lot of trauma, a lot of devastation, a lot of feelings of betrayal by the rest of the world, and also a sense of gratitude in some cases where they've managed to find a place that has offered them refuge and not just as a way to continue sort of existing at the most basic levels, but also an opportunity to thrive.
And just in terms of that one group, I mean, what do you feel like, what's your big takeaway in terms of impact, the war in Syria and the impact that it's had?
Well, they will never be who they were in 2011 or who they might have become in 2011, for better and for worse. You know, I have one couple is a young couple. He is from Idlib. She's from the coast. They were married and they had three small children. They had a really comfortable life in Syria in that he was a pastry chef and he had a quite successful pastry shop. He happened to be from Idlib and they were living in an area that was heavily pro-regime on the coast in Latakia. And so he was targeted as somebody who would just naturally somehow be an enemy of the state. And their neighbors would threaten them, threaten the children, threatened his wife while he was at work. So they took the risk. He sold a bunch of property, like a car and a TV and things like that. And he strapped $18,000 to his body and they took the trip on the raft across the sea. And they understand that they did this for their small three children who now, now speak Swedish, are living in Swedish schools, but they understand that it was at the expense of a future and a happiness or a life that they could have had for themselves. Whereas, other ones are thriving in a way that they might not have thrived in Syria. One of the refugees that I'm writing about just got a full scholarship to Humboldt University in Berlin, where she's doing a master's in international relations. So, I mean, it really, it's a huge spectrum of people, and it's hard to say that one sums up the experience of all, except the one thing that we could say they have in common is that they have lived lives that they did not imagine they would live, again, for better and for worse.
Besides the humanitarian impact, the refugee crisis, what other ways do you think the Syrian conflict has impacted the world?
I mean, in so many ways. I think Syria was sort of the greatest test, or a very great test, of what our commitment to human rights and refugee rights was going to look like, a test of the idea of Europe as a union and not just the sum of its parts, a test of whether we had learned from past mistakes of being blinded by a fear of Islamists, of not knowing who the peoples of the Middle East actually are, of only being able to see the region through these sort of black and white binaries that makes invisible the vast majority, you know, a test of whether we had worked through the kind of Islamophobia that led us to what have been disastrous wars, I would say, in Iraq and Afghanistan. Whether we would be able to withstand and respond to the kind of onslaught of disinformation campaigns. I mean, as journalists that we've witnessed coming out, I think Syria was sort of like the test grounds for that, you know, that have made it impossible to really know, for a lot of people even of good intentions, to know what is going on and to feel that they can participate in determining what their countries should do. I think it was also a test of how we would be able to negotiate or confront states like Russia and Iran, which have asserted like a new kind of insisted on a greater kind of participation in geopolitics. You know, whether we had any kind of promising alternative to backing strongmen. Whether or not we could even have empathy for our fellow human beings. I do think that Syria provided a test for all of these things. And I'd say it was sort of resoundingly, you know, poor marks from everybody.
Ali Amalek, journalist and author, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
The past 8 years have been a struggle for Syrian clarinetist Kenan Azmeh. Damascus used to be his home, and even after he moved to New York City, Azmeh continued to travel back to Damascus to see family, to be inspired. That all stopped 8 years ago. Throughout the war, he's continued to work and perform around the globe, just not in Syria. Azmeh told cellist Yo-Yo Ma that he didn't compose anything about the war, but he did feel a stronger need for his voice, his clarinet, to be heard.
I felt that I owed to myself to keep my voice loud. If the whole uprising was about people expressing themselves, and I thought, like, you know, I owe to myself actually to really speak up.
This piece of music is from Kenan Azmeh's latest recording, Uneven Sky. It's a work by a Syrian composer from Aleppo. Dia Sukari was his name, born in 1934, died in 2010, 1 year before the war began. This Dia Sukari piece is titled simply Parole, or Words.